So today is part three of our four-part series on God's existence. And I'll admit that as one who normally preaches straight from the Bible, this is a little bit different. And I'm sure it's a little different for you as well. But it's good for us to understand that there are rational, philosophical, scientific reasons for believing the way that we do. And for us to be aware of these so that we can share them as needed with people who may not come from a religious background. So I don't expect you to memorize all the quotes or the scientific figures that I'm sharing, but I do think it would be good for you to just generally keep in mind the concepts that we're sharing. Like week one, we saw through science and reason and observation that our universe had a beginning. And we saw that if the universe had a beginning, and that was the start of all time and space and matter, that there must be some sort of cause that's able to exist outside of time, space, and matter. And to me, the most logical conclusion is that God was that first cause. Last week, we saw that there's morality in our world, objective morality. We saw that things like the Holocaust were wrong, even if cultures and people like the Nazis thought it was right. And we saw that atheism and naturalism is not a good explanation for how objective morality came about. The better explanation is that there is a God, a perfectly good God, whose loving and just character forms the foundation and the basis for value, and his commands to us, either clearly through his word or through other means, are the basis for what's right and for what's wrong. Now, if you missed either presentation or you just want to go back and review, go on our Facebook page or our YouTube page, and I've been putting a couple of videos on our Facebook group page that are like 5 minutes long and are pretty easy to understand and really easy to share with your friends. So something to keep in mind. Now, we've presented evidence for God in general. Next week, we're going to give evidence for the historical reliability of the resurrection of Jesus. So I think you're going to be especially interested in that. But I'm super excited for today's topic. A number of years ago, there was a man named Anthony Flew. Anthony was a very influential and prominent atheist. During the course of his career, he taught at some of the big-time universities like Oxford and Aberdeen and Keele and Reading and York University in Toronto. For much of his career, he was a strong advocate for a powerful advocate for atheism. He wrote big books on these topics. And even as late as 2003, he was one of the signatories of the Humanist Manifesto number 3. And last week we saw that the humanists are people who deny the existence of God but still affirm the value and the potential of humanity. But in 2004, the world was shocked, and particularly the atheist community was just shocked when he admitted that he had changed his position. Anthony Flew, who was called by one author the world's most notorious atheist, something that he humbly denied, he had changed his beliefs and now believed that there was some sort of intelligent creator of our universe. How could somebody go from firm disbelief in God, firm advocacy of atheism, to all of a sudden change their beliefs? In the words of Anthony Flew, it was because of a lifelong commitment to follow the evidence where it leads. And his search for evidence through science had led him to God. If you want to know his whole story, you can read his book, and I have a copy of it that I forgot to bring here to hold up before you today. But his book is called There Is a God. And there's the word no that's crossed out to say there is a God, because he changed his position. But today's presentation, I'm going to be sharing one of the reasons that influenced his change. In the 1950s, there was a guy named Fred Hoyle, and he was a British astrophysicist. And in his scientific research and discovery, he learned, as he studied carbon and how carbon forms in our universe, he came to believe just how unlikely it is that our universe would have carbon and the amount of carbon that we need. Carbon, as you know, is the foundation for all life in our universe. We are built largely off of carbon. And oddly enough, he came to see that this just didn't seem to make sense through blind chance. He never became a Christian. He never professed belief in God, but he was struck with how obviously designed our universe appeared to be. Regarding his discoveries, and we'll put a quote here up on the screen, he said the following: "Would you not say to yourself, some supercalculating intellect must have designed the properties of the carbon atom? Otherwise, the chance of my finding such an atom through blind forces of nature would be utterly minuscule. A common sense interpretation of the facts suggests that a super intellect has monkeyed with physics as well as chemistry and biology, and that there are no blind forces worth speaking about in nature. The number one calculates from the facts seems to me so overwhelming as to put this conclusion almost beyond question." Secular scientist, based on his discoveries, he wasn't willing to admit that there's a God, but he said, "Well, it sure seems like there's some super intellect. It sure seems like something has monkeyed with the physics." And since Hoyle's discovery, there have been many, many similar discoveries throughout the decades since the 1950s that have added to this growing body of evidence that our universe seems finely tuned to allow life. In fact, scientists from all stripes, whether they're Christian or atheist or agnostic, seem to recognize our universe seems to be special, special in a way that allows life to exist. And I'll give you an example here. A couple of weeks ago, my mother-in-law and father-in-law were visiting and staying with us, and my mother-in-law said, "Hey, could I do some laundry?" "Sure, no problem. Help yourself." So she goes to the laundry machine, she puts in her wash, does her wash, at least the first load, even dries it, and then noticed her clothes didn't seem that clean. And she realized she hadn't finely tuned the knobs on the washer. I was the one who had done the last load. I did a very, very small load, and so I set the washer to the smallest amount of water possible. She put in a large jumbo load into the washer that was dirty, and it didn't get cleaned. The knobs on the washer have to be finely tuned to have the washer be a clean clothes permitting washer. And in a similar way, our universe is a lot like my washing machine. The washing machine has to be finely tuned, the knobs have to be on the right settings. The settings in our universe for the physical laws and constants and the properties of our universe, they have to be set to the right setting, otherwise our universe cannot be a life-permitting universe. But instead of just a couple of knobs with a few settings, our universe has at least dozens of settings. In fact, one scientist says 76 that he's identified. And these settings don't just have a few options, there are millions and trillions and trillions and trillions of options. And so the question is, how likely is it that all the settings just happen to be dialed to the right position to allow our universe to permit life? So we'll give you some examples here, some examples of the fine-tuning. And fine-tuning is a religiously neutral term in the scientific community. But some examples are things like the expansion rate of the universe seems to be just right, the weak nuclear force, just the right strength. And don't worry if you don't know what these things mean. I'm just giving you a few examples. The strong nuclear force, if it was 2% stronger, we'd have no sun, no water, no life. If it was 5% weaker, life would not exist. The strength of gravitation, the pull of gravity, is just right. The electromagnetic force, the cosmological constant, which we'll talk about in a moment, the speed of light, and many other properties of our universe are just right to allow life to exist. And one of the delicate balances in our universe is, as Paul Davies, the physicist, identifies, is the balance between gravity and electromagnetism. He says if the force of either one were changed by as little as one part in 10 to the 40th, we wouldn't exist. Now, 10 to the 40th is an extremely large number, and let me see if I can illustrate it to you. Imagine that you're cold and you need to start a fire. But fortunately, there's a pile of matches nearby. But only one of the matches in the whole pile has a head on it for striking on the box. All the other ones have the head cut off. Now, what's the chances that you would just randomly grab the right match without looking on your first try? And you naturally say, well, it depends on how many matches are in the pile. If it's a pile of two matches, your odds are pretty good. But in this case, the pile of matches has 10 to the 40th number of matches. And do you know how big that pile would have to be? Well, it would be the size of the Earth, times a million, and then times a million one more time. So this pile, if it was a sphere, would barely just fit between the Earth and the Sun. Remember, that's all a big pile of matches, and only one of those matches can make a fire. That's the chance of gravity or electromagnetism just by chance having the right value to allow life in our universe. What are the odds? Randomly, you'll grab one without looking, first try, and it will be the right one. Roger Penrose, the British mathematician from Oxford University, he commented on the probability of the universe by chance alone having the initial entropy state that it did. And entropy is a fancy word that relates to how organized and ordered something is. He said, and he's not a really religious guy at all, he said the chances on accident of our universe having this initial order is one part in 10 to the 10 to the 123rd. Now, this is an extremely large number. If you were to try to write this number and put the number of zeros needed to make this number, you know how many zeros that would be? Well, if you put one zero on every atom in our universe, you still wouldn't have enough zeros. They say there are only about 10 to the 78th power atoms in our universe. Roger Penrose recognizes that this force is so finely tuned that there are not enough atoms in our universe than there are zeros in the number that this probability is based on. And so when you start to realize that it's not just one or two, but it's dozens of these kinds of things that are just finely tuned in our universe, it becomes a wonder that life exists, at least based on a naturalistic worldview. So there are a lot of reactions to fine-tuning, and most scientists don't deny the amazing discoveries that have been made in this area. In fact, Stephen Hawking, even though he never professed belief in God, notice what he said about this. He said, "The overwhelming impression is one of order. The more we discover about the universe, the more we find that it is governed by rational laws." And you still have the question, why does the universe bother to exist? If you like, you can define God to be the answer to that question. He didn't deny the powerful force or implications of the fine-tuning. Charles Darwin, while he never had the opportunity to learn about these latest scientific discoveries, even as early as the 1850s, he recognized just how improbable life was. At the time that he wrote his major book, Origin of Species, in 1859, notice what he said. He later would call himself agnostic, but at the time of writing this book, here's what he said about himself. He said, "Reason tells me of the extreme difficulty, or rather impossibility, of conceiving this immense and wonderful universe, including man with his capability of looking far backward and far into futurity, as the result of blind chance or necessity. When thus reflecting, I feel compelled to look at a first cause having an intelligent mind in some degree analogous to that of man, and I deserve to be called a theist." At the time he wrote Origin of Species, Darwin said, "I guess you could call me a theist," because he recognized how improbable life really should be if there is no God. Or you can consider how the famous mathematician and physicist Freeman Dyson puts it. He said this, "The more I examine the universe and study the details of its architecture, the more evidence I find that the universe, in some sense, knew we were coming." In other words, he recognized it just doesn't seem like this could have come by chance. Given just how unlikely the fine-tuning is, Paul Davies commented, saying that scientists are slowly waking up to an inconvenient truth. The universe looks suspiciously like a fix. The issues concerns the very laws of nature themselves. For 40 years, physicists and cosmologists have quietly been collecting examples of all too convenient coincidences that have special features in the underlying laws of the universe that seem to be necessary in order for life and hence conscious beings to exist. Change any one of them and the consequences would be lethal. The apparent design of our universe has made even atheists and agnostics struggle to speak in a non-religious language. For example, you can take Leonard Susskind, who developed the theoretical physics department at Stanford University, and I believe still teaches there today. I was watching a video where he was being interviewed on the topic of fine-tuning, and notice how he expressed it. He said, "Whatever made the universe," I hate to say whoever made the universe, physicists have a habit of talking in that language, "whoever made the universe," they don't really mean it, he said, "but whoever made the universe made it with an incredibly small cosmological constant, and nobody really knows why. The one thing we do know is if it were very much stronger, it would have prevented our existence." So even though he doesn't believe in God, he struggles to not use terms like, well, whoever or whatever made the universe. It's just kind of that obvious gut reaction to the facts as they see it. Now, there are some people who just fail to see the amazing implications of the fine-tuning of the universe. They just say, well, we shouldn't be surprised that there's fine-tuning because we're here, and therefore, the universe would have to be finely tuned. But this doesn't actually address the issue. It doesn't address just how incredibly improbable it is that our universe, by chance alone, should have these properties that allow us to exist. Imagine if you find yourself in front of the Nazi firing squad. You've been accused of some crime that you haven't done, and they have 100 expert marksmen with their rifles trained on you. The command is given, ready, aim, fire. The crack of 100 rifles sounds, but amazingly, you don't die. You find yourself still there, standing against the wall, and there are 100 bullet marks near you, but not a single one hit you. What would you conclude in that moment? Would you say, well, I guess I shouldn't be surprised that they all missed, because after all, if they hadn't missed, I wouldn't be here to be surprised about it. Nothing to see here. We wouldn't say that. We would, of course, be surprised that they all missed because of how improbable it would be. And we'd either conclude that you were incredibly lucky or that they missed on purpose, that there was some design behind them missing. But of course, in the case of the universe, you'd have to have trillions and trillions and trillions of expert marksmen to make the analogy a little bit more comparable. Another way to think about it is like this. If your neighbor's house burns down and an insurance investigator comes out to see, okay, what really caused the fire, and as the insurance investigator is looking around, he notices that there are some gas cans and there are some matches and lighters right nearby. What might the insurance investigator conclude? Arson, right? Somebody's just trying to collect insurance money by burning their house down. But imagine instead that the insurance investigator turns in his report and says, I know exactly what caused the fire, and it was oxygen. While oxygen is a necessary condition for fire, it's not the obvious conclusion to what caused it. It's kind of like a couple weeks ago we talked about scientific reason for the car going fast versus the personal reason. I just didn't want to be late. And people who deny the implications of the fine-tuning, it's a similar thing, because really we're looking at what's the best explanation, not for how, but for why these conditions exist at all. So as it seems to me and many others, there's really only kind of three basic options for how fine-tuning exists. Option number one, this is the only way that it could be. The universe just had to be this way. And for some reason, these incredibly improbable conditions were just necessary. Option two is that the universe is just the result of chance. And option three, the universe was designed. So let's take a look at the first option real quick here. Is it possible that this is the only kind of universe that could have been generated somehow? According to Leonard Susskind, who we referred to earlier from Stanford University, in a word, no. He says, the laws of physics could have been very different. You can imagine a universe that had no electrons in it. And there's nothing wrong with that, he says. What would happen if you threw away electrons? Well, there'd be no atoms, there'd be no chemistry, no biology, and no people to ask the question. We just wouldn't be here to ask the question. And Leonard is not the only one. There is not much traction in the scientific community to suggest that our universe simply had to be this way. So what about the idea that our universe is just here by chance and that we got extremely lucky? Is this more probable? Well, we've already seen that just one or two of these initial conditions or constants of our universe is extremely unlikely, let alone that dozens of them, and perhaps dozens and dozens and dozens, are lined up just right. Perhaps for this reason, Anthony Flew, the guy who converted from atheism to a belief in God, he said virtually no scientist, major scientist today, claims that fine-tuning was merely the result of chance in a single universe. And you'll notice that he said single universe, because there has been a shift in thinking, perhaps because it is so unlikely that a single universe could have just the right constants and quantities and settings. Maybe there are an infinite number of universes. This is called multiverse, or the landscape, or the megaverse. There's different ways to describe it. And so people have started to embrace this concept, because if you have a zillion, to use a technical number, right? If you have a zillion universes, it makes it much more probable that one universe, or perhaps a couple of them, will have life-permitting qualities. And while many are tempted to believe this, even while he was an atheist, Anthony Flew wasn't buying it. He didn't see it as a viable option. Notice what he said here. He said, the postulation of multiple universes, I maintained, is truly a desperate alternative. If the existence of one universe requires an explanation, multiple universes requires a much bigger explanation. It seems a little like the case of a schoolboy whose teacher doesn't believe that his dog ate his homework, so he replaces the first version with the story that a pack of dogs, too many of them to count, ate his homework. I like the way he puts that. Hugh Ross, who's a Canadian physicist, astrophysicist, he also recognizes the inadequacy of the multiverse to truly explain things. He says, this suggestion is really just a flagrant abuse of probability theory. It assumes the benefit of an infinite sample size without any evidence that the sample size exceeds one. As an interesting fact, in his early years, Hugh Ross actually became a Christian by following science. Science led him to conclude, as it did for Anthony Flew, that there must be a God. Now, in a very honest moment, and I appreciate his candor, Leonard Susskind, again, he admits that, we'll just see it here. If for some unforeseen reason, he said, the landscape or multiverse theory turns out to be inconsistent, maybe for mathematical reasons or because it disagrees with observation, I'm pretty sure that physicists will go on searching for natural explanations of the world. But I have to say, if that happens, as things stand now, we will be in a very awkward position. Without any explanation of nature's fine tunings, we'll be hard pressed to answer the intelligent design critics. One might even argue that the hope that a mathematically unique solution will emerge is as faith-based as intelligent design. This is a very interesting statement by him, saying if the multiverse doesn't pan out, it's going to get awkward, because there are not all, but some who seem to be embracing it as an option for there not to be a God. And as Bernard Carr, a British professor of mathematics and astronomy, once said, if you don't want a God, you'd better have a multiverse. But the concept of a multiverse is not without challenges. And you could probably think about some of these on your own, like other than the obvious things, like we can't observe it, we can't test it, it's hard for it to ever be falsified. But others notice that if the multiverse were to exist, it itself would probably have some mechanism or process that would require fine-tuning. And so in trying to escape the fine-tuning argument, you come up with another solution that still requires fine-tuning to generate the variety of all these different multiverses, all these different universes. And so we come back to the same question that we started with. And a couple weeks ago, we actually saw that these guys, Bohr, Guth, and Vilenkin, had a theorem which actually proved that even inflationary multiverse scenarios have universes that have a beginning, that have an absolute beginning. And so we come back to these essential questions that we started with in the beginning. The mathematician and philosopher David Berlinsky, I like the way he put it. He said, the landscape or multiverse does not, of course, answer the question, what caused the landscape to exist? How could it? If nothing caused the landscape, it does not answer the question of why it should be there at all. And so while the multiverse does help with this increasing the odds of a life-permitting universe to exist somewhere, it also presents new challenges, like the need to be finely tuned itself. And so in the end, it doesn't really solve things as I see it. Now, if you're interested in reading more about this and you want to dig into it more, you could read the book Reasonable Faith or On Guard that we've mentioned, or there's a book that's the response to Richard Dawkins' book, The God Delusion. It's a response by David Berlinsky called The Devil's Delusion, and it's a fascinating and an interesting book. I believe, and I line up with what the philosopher Richard Swinburne said, where he admitted, it's crazy to postulate a trillion causally unconnected universes to explain the features of one universe when postulating just one entity, God, will do the job. So if we were to summarize the argument for today, we could say this. The fine-tuning of the universe is either due to physical necessity, chance, or design. But I think we've shared some good reasons that it's not due to physical necessity or chance. And as I see it, that leaves only one option left. Our universe is therefore due to design. And if there's a true designer, a design, there must be a designer. And we call that designer God. When thinking about the data for the beginning of the universe that scientists have, Arno Penzias, who actually received a Nobel Prize in physics, admitted the following. He said, the best data we have are exactly what I would have predicted had I nothing to go on but the five books of Moses, the Psalms, and the Bible as a whole. Now, I don't know exactly what scriptures Penzias was thinking about, but maybe he was thinking about something like Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Or perhaps Job 26, verse 7, he stretches out the north over the void and hangs the earth on nothing. Psalm 19, verse 1, the heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky proclaims his handiwork. Day to day pours out speech, and night to night reveals knowledge. It seems as though scientists today are starting to see the knowledge that God has put into the heavens. Or what about Romans 1:20? For his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in things that have been made, so they are without excuse. Or Colossians 1:16 and 17. For by him all things were created, in heaven and earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authority, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. Or perhaps this last one here from Psalm 119. Your word, Lord, is eternal. It stands firm where? In the heavens, in the universe. Your faithfulness continues throughout all generations. You established what? The earth, and it endures. Your laws to this day, for all things serve you. Perhaps there is a master designer, a master intellect, whose laws govern the universe. One who created all things. If there is a God, one that created the universe, one who fine-tuned it, and one who's the foundation of morality and value in our world, I'd like to get to know more about him. How about you? I'd like to tell others about him as well. Well, I'd like you to invite you to join us next week as we wrap up our series and as we take a closer look at the claims of Christianity that Jesus rose from the grave. Because if Jesus really did rise from the grave, then he's the one we should follow. And he's the one that we should await meeting someday. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.